I had the dregs of a bottle of Fanta Orange, one liter bottle had about an inch left in the bottom, and I topped it up with carbonated spring water. It tastes like piss. It tastes like what I imagine piss would taste like. The only piss I've ever come close to almost tasting was a cat's piss. By that I mean that my face has come near a deposit of cat piss. I wasn't going to try and drink it. That's as near as you come to drinking it. It's not drinking it, it's smelling it. Not wishing to smell it, but smelling it. That's as close as I've got to drinking piss under than mine ever. I do remember once as a child, there was a local neighbourhood dog called Sheba. It looked a bit like a German shepherd, but wider and fatter, and older and lazier, and chubbier. I happened to be sitting out on the wall in the neighbourhood one day, waiting for my friends to come out. I'd be sitting on this wall, and I saw this dog. I had a can of Fanta Orange or Club Orange with me. I happened to notice this neighbourhood dog, Sheba, who, thank Christ, is probably about 30 years dead by now, at least. And this dog, it started pissing, and the colour of its piss was very, very similar to the orange drink that I was drinking. It absolutely repulsed me. Now that I think about it, maybe I was drinking a more inferior orangeade. That's why there was a similarity. Maybe I was drinking, there was a brand called One Cal. Crazy prices, the supermarket chain. We used to go shopping there sometimes and they always had a special offer on 10 pence cans of orangeade and lemon and lime. Cheap, shitty stuff that a child would be reasonably satisfied with. Yeah, I used to get a can of that sometimes for 10 pence. I think that was more along the lines of what Sheba's piss looked like. Either way, it was gross. You see this dog, Sheba. Well, I don't know if Sheba was a male or a female. I never asked. I just knew this was a neighbourhood dog. He used to sit in the middle of the road and scare the shit out of everyone. Even though it was supposedly quite a calm, friendly dog. It was a bit scary looking. Just not very athletic looking. Looked like a fat version of an Alsatian. Now, why am I telling you that? I don't know. Oh yes, I was telling you about the beverage. This beverage. It's a ridiculous beverage. It's not actually like drinking a dog's piss. I would argue it's worse than drinking just the water. I got greedy. I thought, oh, there's a little bit of Fanta left in this bottle. I could turn this into a whole bottle of slightly Fanta, but mostly water. It's a bad idea. I'm 10 minutes into this. Started on something about dog piss. I don't feel like I've said very much. I feel like I'll be cutting out most of this. If you're listening to this in a coma, well, in a suspected coma, perhaps you're somewhat conscious, and people think you're a vegetable or something. People have mixed reactions to vegetables nowadays. Some people think, oh, vegetables, they're very good. If you're a vegetable, you're not harming animals, and we like animals, so well done for being a healthy source of nutrition that doesn't involve killing people. That's what people think about vegetables, some of them. Then other ones think, oh, vegetables, they rot. Vegetables rot within days. You go shopping for fruit and vegetables. You can go down to your local fruit and vegetable shop. If such a thing still exists, does such a thing still exist? I don't know. I buy fruit and vegetables in a supermarket like a normal 21st century adult if I do my fruit and vegetables. When I was a child, you had fruit and vegetable shops or a greengrocer, perhaps you'd call it. There'd be a fruit market, perhaps, a fruit and vegetable market, selling them off a table in the middle of a pedestrianised street. They go up, there'd be piles and piles and piles of apples, and piles and piles and piles of cabbages, and piles and piles and piles of lemons, and piles and piles and piles of bananas. Bananas were the particularly ludicrous fruit. You'd buy a banana, first thing you'd learn when you became a householder, a banana is basically a murderer. If you put a banana in your food basket beside other food, it makes the other food die within a day or two. It actually causes rot. So you have to keep your banana hanging on a hook, preferably as far away as possible, just to stop by committing murder. So the people who say meat is murder don't really know about the banana thing, presumably. They think, oh no, bananas are great. They're a fruit. And squeeze a banana, get all the juice out of it, and have a lovely, delicious banana smoothie. It's the best thing for you. Then cram some other vegetables into you. They have these smoothie bars. It's basically a counter in a shopping centre or somewhere. You go up and say, hello, I'd love a big smoothie. So they give you a big plastic cup with a straw in it, and they chop up some bananas and tomatoes and a head of lettuce and a spring onion, or if you're adventurous, some chilies, and they put it in a blender, and then they put the contents of the blender into this plastic cup, and they put a lid on it. These plastic beverage holders that they give you these drinks in, especially fruity smoothies and things, they put this weird round bulbous lid on, but it's not a lid because it has a big hole in the top. That's where you put the straw. It's not a lid. I suppose it stops passing flies from going into the drink. If a fly was coming straight down from overhead, it could dive straight into that beverage through the big hole in the top. If you get a smoothie, or if you get an iced drink from the likes of McDonald's, it's all on display. For some reason, when you get one of these beverages, you want everyone to see it. If it's coffee, no, it's hidden behind the cardboard cup. You don't put a little window on it where everyone can see what you're drinking. No, coffee through a cup window. It would look like diarrhea, basically. Even though we all know coffee is delicious, but if you were looking at someone's coffee through a window in the plastic cup that you see them carrying on a train, you think, oh Christ, what are they drinking? That looks horrible. I wonder, is it some sort of medical treatment they have to take? That looks absolutely appalling. I'm going to take a note of the brand name that's on that and make sure never to go to that outlet or buy their stuff. It looks appalling. So it looks like basically brown dregs. So no, they don't want to see that. When you're showing off your coffee, the old days, every shop you went to, especially in the city centre, you'd buy some trousers and you put in a big paper bag. And we all know the purpose of the paper bag was for you to carry around that shop's logo for the rest of the day for everyone to see. You do that on a coffee cup, you see the logo and that's fine. But if there was a little window on the side of that coffee cup, they would just see this disgusting brown stuff and that would be negative marketing. The most you want to see from someone else's coffee is what it looks from the top. Because the likes of a cappuccino can look very appetizing from overhead. The problem with the smoothies is that you're not advertising it to other customers. You're advertising it to insects and they're flying overhead. You have a hole in the top where the straw goes in. A fly can go plummeting straight down into that and dive into it and have a very pleasant death in that fruity beverage. If they're just passing and you haven't really noticed it, they're just passing horizontally over a thing, just do a flyby and not be a problem at all. They're just bypassers, they're just extras in this whole scene. So then you don't have to worry about that. Well, why do you want your smoothie to be on display to everyone? That puts a lot of pressure on people. For one thing, the people who design these drinks, they're designed to be healthy. They're designed to put some energy and health into your body. They shouldn't have to worry about what they look like. If they go, oh Christ, this fella wants a banana and walnut and cabbage smoothie, but I'm going to have to give it to him in this see-through cup that also has our logo on it. And even if it doesn't, everyone's going to know the guard from here. They'll be walking around nearby with it. No, we can't have that. So they put colouring in it, presumably, or they limit what can be put into these things, or they do something to make sure that it doesn't come out looking like shit. Because if they give you a smoothie that looks like shit, they know you're going to be carrying that around all day, and even if you're enjoying every sip of it, you might think it's the most delicious drink you've ever had. Other passengers on your bus, or people watching you walking around the mall, strolling around the mall, sipping from this cup that looks like liquidized shit, will see that and think, oh Christ, I'm never buying a smoothie from that place. That looks appalling. That looks appalling. That fellow who's drinking it must be mentally ill. Or else he's not looking down while he's drinking it, which I suppose is reasonable because he is walking around. He's looking where he's going. I don't know. And now they have the paper straws as well. So you kind of have to pay more attention to your beverage because you're managing this paper straw that's rather fragile. You have to do a lot of jiggling it and moving it around and making sure it's still free flowing through the paper straw before it turns into papier mâché. So you're paying more attention to your beverage. You're going to notice it looks like diarrhea. And your brain is confused because your brain thinks, oh, this looks like diarrhea. But the other part of your brain is thinking, oh, this tastes delicious. That's jarring for your brain. So I don't know. I don't know what the solution is to that. Maybe it doesn't need to be solutioned. Maybe we're all fine with that. We're all fine with people going around with these beverages that look like diarrhea. We're okay with it in our heads, maybe. I suppose. We all know intellectually it's not really diarrhea. It might become diarrhea later, but we worry about that later. I suppose that's why we associate bananas sometimes with comical, incompetent, armed robberies where the fella turns up hoping to rob a bank, but he's only got a banana, he hasn't got a gun, so he has a banana and he's maybe trying to make it look like a gun by covering it with a sleeve or something so it looks like the shape of a gun, perhaps. We associate bananas with that. We know bananas murder other fruit. Bananas are just weird anyway, we know that. We know bananas are just weird anyway. They're a source of something called potassium that no one seems to know what it is, but apparently it's both very important and very bad or something. I can never remember which is the most. Is it dangerous or good, or you die if you don't have potassium, or you die if you have too much potassium? It's a bit like water in that respect, I suppose. You can die from too much water. There was a contestant on an American radio station a few years ago died because there was some sort of challenge involving drinking loads of water, and they died from drinking loads of water. I suppose our genes do that to make sure that someone doesn't drink all of the water. Because if someone drinks all of the water, then everyone else dies. So I suppose we evolved to not be able to drink a huge amount of water, and that's why. That's why you die if you drink too much water. It protects the species overall, even if someone does tragically die from it. The fact that our bodies can only handle a certain amount of water means that no single one of us can ever drink all of the water supply and leave nothing for anyone else. So that's a good thing, I suppose. Problem is, in modern society, you don't have to be able to drink the water to be able to waste it. You can spray it on their cars or flush their toilet too often or waste it in other ways. You don't need to be able to drink it. And that's a problem, I suppose. Maybe we should separate our drinking water from our toilet water. There's a thing called eau de toilette. It's some sort of product that you spray on yourself to make yourself more pleasant. Well, it's called toilet water or eau de toilette if you're French. Do they call it eau de toilette in France? I don't know. We're saying it in French to make it sound exotic, so it probably doesn't sound exotic if you say it in French in France. Now, of course, it's just toilet water if you say it in English. I know, it's not the same as the water that comes out of the toilet. I know. And it's not like holy water either. People like to get holy water. I found a little bottle of holy water in this room recently on a tiny shelf above this alcove where I'm recording. It used to be an alcove for a bed. It was a tiny shelf and I found a little bottle of holy water high up. I think it may have come from Lourdes in France. As far as I know, it's not toilet water. There's no reason why it couldn't have been, because the idea with holy water is that it's blessed and then you just keep it in a bottle somewhere. It's like carrying around a ready-made blessing. You wouldn't drink it, that would be disrespectful. like the communion wafer. You wouldn't keep a supply of it in a bottle to have a sip out of it every now and then when you want to feel holy. No, you just get a little container of it, perhaps in a little bottle shaped like Mary, the mother of Jesus, or some religious figure, or in a cross-shaped bottle. And you kind of hang it somewhere or put it on a shelf for your son to find 2 years after you die. Perhaps they were supposed to find that bottle of water. I wonder, is this being blessed properly? Maybe you needed a top-up blessing every couple of years. Maybe it stopped working. I don't know. The problems I've had this week. Jodie, our oldest cat, died last weekend from an illness. She didn't die violently or anything. She wasn't gunned down. I've had lots of things breaking this week. Almost broke a microwave. Almost broke my tongue last week. There was a problem with a sewer pipe that caused a very unpleasant problem outside this house. There's been all sorts of crap this week. I think it's from that thing Frank Edward Nora talks about on the Overnightscape. Mercury retrograde. There's some condition in the planets whereby every now and then you get a week or two when there's a lot of technical problems, communication problems, things breaking. I think that's happened this week. I think I broke a couple of pairs of earphones as well. All sorts of shit like that. Literal shit. In the case of the drains issue. Literal shit outside of my house, cleaned up by a professional. They're very good, these drain cleaners. You ring them up and say, "Hello, can you come along and clean up this shit, please?" While I stand there looking sheepish and guilty and make damn sure to give you a good tip. And then ask for your expertise. I say, "What do you think is wrong there?" And they say, "I think what happened is a load of shit and used toilet paper somehow came from your house and ended up on the footpath rather than staying in the pipe that's supposed to be under that path. And basically, you're all going to die." Had any problem with earphones this week by any chance? How's your mouth that you injured somehow last week? It's actually starting to hurt at the moment. I thought it was fixed. I thought I had dealt with this mouth. But no, as I move my tongue now, it's starting to hurt a bit. That's rather irritating. So all my videos I made from the previous episode, my voice sounded more slurred than usual in those. I made sure to make the subtitles extra large on those videos from that last episode of this podcast. Might have to do the same again. You have probably no idea what I'm saying here, have you? Probably no idea. You're just listening to this like a dog or a cat watches its owners talking and says, "I wonder what that sound is they're making or what it means. Does it mean I'm getting fed soon?" It probably does. Well, it doesn't mean you're getting fed. I'm in no position to feed you, the listener, unfortunately. And you're not one of my pets anyway. No offence, I have enough mouths to feed in this house. Less mouths than we did a week ago, sadly. Two cats walk into a bar. One of the cats says, "Can I have a pint of your finest milk, please?" And the man behind the bar says, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir, I don't produce milk. I don't produce milk, I'm not a female, I'm a male. I don't produce milk of any kind, I'm incapable of producing milk. Not even cat milk, and not even the fake cat milk that they sell in shops that's called cat milk. It's actually cow milk, and it's only called cat milk because they remove the stuff that makes cats have diarrhea from it. Because cats are lactose intolerant, so they remove the lactose or don't introduce the lactose into it in the first place. That's not cat milk at all. Well, they call it cat milk in fairness. They don't call it cat's milk. They're not meaning to imply that it comes from a cat. They call it cat milk because it's for cats. I think I've seen hung a label on the shelf saying cat's milk does not come from cows. It's milk designed for cats. Well, not designed. Mother Nature didn't design this milk for cats. If you're a cat on a farm and you're going around getting milk directly from cows, you're getting lactose from that. You're probably going around telling everyone, "Oh yes, I drink raw milk." Because people who drink raw milk are very vocal about it. They like to go on about the fact that they drink raw milk. They say, "I drink raw milk, unpasteurized milk, direct from the cow. I put a bucket under the cow, but squirt some milk from the... In fact, I don't even squirt it. I wait until gravity pulls the milk out, because I want it all raw and natural. So I don't squeeze the udders of the cow at all. I just put the bucket there 24/7 and hope some drips come out into the bucket at some point. It's a bit like when you're out in the desert and you run out of water and you have to set up some sort of contraption that will collect condensation or whatever droplets of water form on the roof of your tent at night, and it collects about 3 drops and gathers it into some sort of contraption. It's a bit like that. You have that under the cow and they're all natural, so they don't squeeze the udder, they wait till some milk comes out. Or they wait until a calf walks by and the cow's brain thinks, oh, that's a calf, I better produce milk now. And it spills out a bit into the bucket. And they drink that. They drink it straight from the bucket. Even though the bucket is completely unnatural. The bucket is made from plastic. It's made from plastic. It's probably full of all sorts of things that cause all sorts of diseases. When they're finished with the bucket, they just throw it in the bin. And it ends up inside a fish somewhere. It ends up inside a fish somewhere, and then it ends up in one of those salmon farms. And then back to the cow farm somehow from there. I don't know. Salmon are a weird concept, especially in this country. You go to school, the first 6 years in school, you taught 2 things. One of them was the salmon of knowledge, the folk legend about Fionn MacCool. He caught the mythical salmon of knowledge and he pulled it aside and then he said to some kid, I think he was like his farmhand or something, he said, will you fry this up for me? I'm going to eat this, the salmon of knowledge, because when you eat the salmon of knowledge, the first person who eats the salmon of knowledge, they become a genius or something. They become the next Professor Stephen Hawking. And now Professor Stephen Hawking hadn't been born yet, so the next Professor Stephen Hawking, as it turned out, would be Professor Stephen Hawking. This is a legend, folk legend. It's not set in any particular time. I think the implication is that it's set hundreds of years ago. Anyway, this fella, he catches the salmon, he tells this kid to fry up for him so he can eat it. And while the kid is frying the salmon of knowledge, a bit of oil splashes onto his hand or something and burns, and he automatically licks it. And then that means he's got the first taste of the salmon of knowledge, so he gets all the knowledge. And that's what happens if you don't fry your own salmon. Why would you fry salmon anyway? Should you do salmon in the oven or a grill? I don't think I've ever fried salmon. No. If you can just buy smoked salmon, you don't have to do anything with it. You can put it straight onto some bread, squeeze some lemon onto it, on some brown bread, and just cram it into your mouth. There's no cooking involved. And no, if you are cooking salmon, no, get the type that you put in the oven. Comes in a foil tray. I suppose he wasn't getting it from a shop, he was getting it from the river. No. Anyway, that's one of the 2 things you learn about salmon in school. What was the other thing? There was something else. Didn't I start this by saying there was 2 things we learned in school in the first 6 years in this country, and one of them was the Fionn salmon. Oh yes, we learned about these salmon, about how they operate. Every year, for some reason, they go down this river. They start at the top of a river at some point and they swim all the way down towards the sea or wherever they live. And then when the reproduction system comes along, they become kind of flying fish, but not really flying fish. They fly in the way that Spider-Man pretends to fly, by jumping from building to building. They jump from rock to rock and they call it leaping. They say these salmon, they leap up the river, they go up waterfalls. Everything else is coming down through the waterfall, including the water, and these salmon are leaping up. They're leaping up. They go all the way up through the waterfalls and up to the top of the river. I think that's where they have their kittens or whatever it is they do. So they teach you all about that in school. So by the end of primary school, you have a mixture of mythical and scientific information about salmon that you have to try and make sense of. And then you go to secondary school and you never hear a word about any of this again. They don't mention the mythical stuff because they start teaching you real history then. and they don't teach you any of the salmon-y stuff because they're teaching you actual science that you might use for something one day. I know there are people who will use the salmon-y stuff to go and become seafood biologists or something, but they'll have to learn about more than frying a salmon and licking it or whatever it is you do. That's the thing they didn't all teach us in school. They taught us all the nature stuff, about the salmon going up river, and they taught us about the fantastical legends of Fionn MacCool and his magical salmon of knowledge. They didn't use the opportunity to teach us a bit about cooking while they were doing that. The only thing I learned about cooking in primary school was that if you're frying up a fish, it can splash you and burn you. So you better be careful. They didn't go on and use that as a teachable moment about how you'd be far better off putting it in the oven or maybe in the George Formby grill. The George Formby grill is a great contraption. It's actually called the George Foreman grill after the boxer George Foreman, but I prefer to call it the George Formby grill. George Formby was a comical English ukulele player who did filthy, filthy, filthy songs in the 1940s, I think it was. Absolute filth. Stuff about being a window cleaner and leering at women in through the windows. And everyone thought he was hilarious because he had buck teeth and a funny voice. And he played the ukulele. They go, something, 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 something. Something, 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 something. When I'm cleaning windows. I didn't have a harmonica, so I'll ease back on my harmonica playing for today, because I know for a fact he didn't use a harmonica. I don't want harmonica playing to be tainted at filth and muck and dirt that he did. He did another one that was called Swimming with the Women. Absolute filth. But no, people thought it was great. People thought it was great. They thought, oh, this is absolutely fucking fantastic. Brian May of O'Queen, his father, did something like that. You think he had something to do with either? Something to do with George Formby. Or he was in a band that was similar to the type of music that George Formby played. I think so. I'm not sure. It's the banjos and things. Banjos are not the same things as ukuleles, I know. You have Steve Martin then, the comedian, used to be comedian in the 1970s, one of the finest comedians known to man, and then he decides to become a musician. He won Grammys for his banjo albums. It's just him and the banjo playing music. I think he became a dentist then during the 80s. And then in the 90s, he started doing movies again. And then in the 2010s, he did that Netflix special with Martin Short. And we were all told, oh, Steve Martin and whoever the fuck Martin Short is. Apparently he's well known and they're basically a couple. They're the bestest of friends and have been forever. So they did some sort of Christmas special for Netflix. We're told this also about Patrick Stewart and that other fella. Then why was Ian McKellen not in Star Trek every day? For years of his life, Patrick Stewart used to get up at 5 in the morning, go to work in Star Trek and stay there until 2 or 3 the next morning. Where the fucking hell was Ian McKellen then? I didn't see him sitting at Ops doing whatever they do there. Point this thing at that planet over there and go at it at Warp 6, Ian. Or Sir Ian, he probably called him Sir Ian. Because on Star Trek, Patrick Stewart, he plays the captain. So he calls the less senior staff who are at the helm, he usually calls them Mr. or whatever it is. They say, oh, Mr. something or other. Turn on the steering wheel thing, turn up the accelerator, point it at that planet over there and get us there. And then he goes, engage. Did they have salmon on Star Trek? I think they had one where there was aliens who look like fish. There is on Star Trek The Next Generation. They look a bit like fish, but they're not. They have to travel in stasis, and when they wake up, they're ravenously hungry. They're kept in storage in traveling, and there's barrels of food kept beside them for when they wake up ravenously hungry, and they eat all the food, and all the racist crew laugh at them. Star Trek have some types of aliens who you're allowed to be racist towards. They have these aliens with huge ears and who are obsessed with profit. and you're allowed to be racist towards them. Everything else, no. The Ferengi, that's what they're called. The established protocol, at least in the 1980s, was that if you came across a Ferengi, you could just laugh at it and say, oh, Christ, there's a Ferengi, they're scum. They're all scum, I hate them, we want them all to die in cold blood. And then, of course, they started trying to develop them into something more respectable. In later spin-offs, they had a Ferengi who was not quite a respected member of the crew, but they had this kid who was hanging around with the captain's son and who seemed rather intelligent and had a brain. Ferengi sounds like a sea creature, doesn't it? Sounds like Scampi or something. Is Scampi a sea animal? I'm not sure. Because you get Scampi, well, where I get Scampi, you get them in a bag in the freezer section in a supermarket. And as some sort of fish, a very small ball of fish wrapped in breadcrumbs or something that you put in the fryer. Very little fish involved. It's like the, what's that stuff rich people eat? Caviar. It's like the caviar of the seafood world. That's what Scampi is nowadays. It used to be you get a full Scampi fish. A Scampi fish was a round white thing. They'd coat it in breadcrumbs or whatever else you fry it in. But now they've replaced that with Scampi bites. It's not a full Scampi. Like a Scampi fillet. So it's a little thing. It was surrounded by breadcrumbs. You used to have this ad for confectionery on the television. Oh! A finger of fudge is just enough to give your kids a treat. And that was supposed to say, oh yes, just give them a finger of fudge. Little pathetic little stick of confectionery. There's some vague second cousin of chocolate or something. The fudge. A fudge is basically a con. They used to talk about this fudge thing. The concept of a fudge used to be talked about a lot during the 1990s in news coverage of the Northern Ireland peace talks. They'd come up with something. They were trying to find agreement on something that they couldn't get past the various sides in these peace talks. So they'd say, oh, they come up with a fudge. The people who liked it would say, oh, we've come up with a mechanism that can get around this. And the people who didn't like it would say, oh, they've come up with a fudge. They're trying to put this fudge on. That's where you fudge everything. Basically, you make everything a bit vague. So nobody has to look like they're doing something they don't want to do because you can't really figure out what it is they're doing. Write it down in messy writing on the peace accord. People go, oh, we signed up to this. It's a bit vague. We don't know what the words are, so it doesn't really mean anything. So it's okay to sign this. We can get people behind this. We can go home and sell this to our people. We can get them to come along with this because it's nonsense. It's fudge. That's what they do with the Cadbury's confectionery item. It's fudge. Could be anything, basically. It tastes a bit like chocolate or toffee or something. Looks a bit like something that might taste nice. Well, it's not really. It's just cheap shit. And a little stick. There's so little in it that it doesn't harm you too much. It's not going to kill your child too much. It's just enough. The song goes, it's just enough to give your kids a treat. It's full of Cadbury's goodness and something's nice to eat. Something, 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 give your kids a treat. That's how the song goes. That's a fudge. I suppose it's useful in diplomatic situations. You've had pretty much an end to violence in Northern Ireland, so I suppose that was arguably a good thing. And balanced fudge is a good thing. Buy your kids some proper chocolate, though. If you want to buy shit for your children, buy proper shit. Don't make it a fudge. What you used to do if you caught your child smoking, the punishment would be that you make them smoke a full packet of cigarettes and that would put them off cigarettes for life. So do the same thing with this chocolate treats thing. Don't go get them a fudge. That's like buying them fake chocolate cigarettes. No. If you find your kid wants to eat chocolate, buy them half a ton of dark chocolate and make them eat every little bit of it. Until they end up in hospital having to have their stomachs pumped because they've eaten so much chocolate. that whatever's in that, what's in dark chocolate? Is there caffeine in that? I don't know. But there's something very dense in the dark chocolate. If they eat enough of that, probably have a similar effect to forcing them to smoke a packet of cigarettes. Because if you force a child to smoke a whole packet of cigarettes, now they still be accused of being a bad parent, even if you're not a parent. You found someone else's kids smoking and you give them a pack of cigarettes, said, smoke every one of these right now in front of me. You'd be accused of being a bad parent, even though you're not their parent. You're imposing bad parenting on these kids, even though you're not their parent. The fact that you're not their parent probably makes it even worse. That's what they'd argue. You've even less business being a bad parent to these kids because you're not their parent at all. You're not authorized to parent them in any way, good or bad. Go do that to your own children, they'll say. And of course you won't do that because you're not really a bad parent. You wouldn't do that to your own children. You'd only do it to someone else's. And you do it to teach them a lesson. So you have that as a defense. Not that you should have to defend wanting to stop children from smoking. Smoking is a terrible thing. Anyone who sees a child smoking should do whatever they can to stop and prevent that. Ideally, get a time machine and go back to whenever smoking was invented. Hopefully it was invented around the same era when baby Hitler came to prominence. So you can go and kill two birds with the one stone, so to speak. Get a time machine and get rid of the cigarette thing. Of course, if you do that, that means cigarettes never got invented because you went back and changed the past. Then it's all going to be all ahead of us because someday someone's going to accidentally invent a cigarette and think, oh, this is great. Everyone have a cigarette. And it just starts all over again. That'll be a bad thing as well. Because we have no memory of the fact that cigarettes used to exist and were bad. We've wiped the timeline, so we know absolutely nothing about these things, and then they just get invented again out of the blue, and we go, oh, these sound great. Let's all have cigarettes. They taste very nice. People talk about the taste of cigarettes. You don't eat them. You don't eat them. If you eat cigarettes, then you get fat. And we all know one thing cigarette aficionados will tell you, is that when you stop smoking, you start putting on weight because that's when you start eating. You don't eat while you're smoking because, well, your mouth isn't wide enough. If you want to eat and smoke at the same time, well, can you have smoked meats in a cigarette and consume it that way? Does that work? Because people like to eat smoked salmon and smoked meats and smoked burgers. Those things are all smoked. Can you smoke that in a cigarette, or does it have to be smoked by someone else, or smoked at the factory, and then you eat the smoked version? So it's not appetizing until it's being pre-smoked. I suppose there's that. So if you got meat that wasn't yet smoked, and you consumed it in the form of a cigarette, that wouldn't be enjoyable because it's not smoked yet. I suppose that makes sense. Into your head. I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, reinventing cigarettes, that sounds awful. That sounds awful. Well, yes, that's the idea. It does sound awful. Well, people talk all the time about reinventing the wheel, usually referring to something that doesn't need to be reinvented. They say, oh, that's like reinventing the wheel. You don't need to reinvent the wheel. Well, the wheel is being responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths on the road, people getting run over, people dying under the wheel of drink drivers, and people dying in car crashes. That's all being caused by the wheel. Maybe the wheel should be reinvented. You make a safer version of it. Would you have a problem with that? Would that be okay with you? If you wanted to make the wheel safer. You make air travel safer every time there's an accident. We have a big, long investigation. We make another hour of the show, Air Crash Investigation. It gets played ad nauseum on National Geographic Channel for the next 20 years. I don't see why we can't do the same with the wheel. We invented a wheel. It caused millions of deaths. Why would we not reinvent it or try to reinvent it as something better? Why not? Why not indeed? And the same is true of cigarettes. Now, I know I'm saying that in the case of cigarettes, we would go back in time and uninvent them entirely, wipe out all of the history where they were invented, so they will never have been invented. And I'm saying in the case of cigarettes that there's a good chance they'll be invented again if we do that. Hopefully they'll invent it more safely next time. In the case of the wheel, I don't think we'd go back and wipe out history and cancel out the invention of the wheel, because a lot of good things have happened as a result of the wheel, including air crash investigators getting to the scene by road and doing all their shit to improve air safety, for one thing. So no, I wouldn't want to completely delete the invention of the wheel from history. But I would want to reinvent the wheel and see if we can do it even better. The wheel is not a bad thing at all, but do it even better this time. Probably not change the shape too much. We'd probably keep it more or less round. Maybe we'd make a 3D thing. Maybe we'd make the wheel more spherical, like we did with animation. We went from 2D animation to 3D animation. Now, I know a lot of the 3D animation, while some of it is done with stop motion photography and you're using plasticine and clay and making 3D characters and scenes, I know a lot of the 3D animation is done on a computer and it's all ones and zeros, and you might consider that to be even less dimensional than 2D. You might think, oh, that stuff they make on a computer, that computer animation, that's just ones and zeros, all this stuff happening on a chip. It's even less real than the 2D cartoons. Well, that's true. In the case of a wheel, if we went from 2D wheels to 3D spherical wheels, I don't think it would be like that, because he wouldn't be making virtual wheels on the computer. He might well be 3D printing them, but we'd be making real wheels. If you have a spherical wheel that can move in any direction, so there'd no longer be the need for steering, the wheel could just go in any direction without having to be turned at all. It's ready to move in any direction. You want to go left, you don't have to turn the wheel at all. It's already facing every direction. You can go left or right or up and down, so no steering needed. On a traditional wheel, it's usually pointing in the way in which you're facing. If you don't steer, you can go either straight forward or straight back. And if you want to turn in any other direction, you have to turn the wheels. I know a spherical wheel is already facing in every direction. It's free to roll whichever way you want. Maybe you're surrounded with a series of brakes. So whatever direction you want it to go in, you release the brakes for that direction. So the car will start rolling in that direction. So if you want to turn left, you've released the left brakes. And then the spherical wheel will start to roll in that direction. And there'll be no danger of it rolling in any other direction, because the brakes will be still engaged for all the other directions. Make it far safer. And that's just an example. I'm not saying you should do that. I'm not an engineer. If you go and reinvent the wheel, you'll probably come up with something even better than that. But that's just an example. It's just an example. Don't go judging it too highly. Not highly. You're probably not judging it highly at all. You probably think it's shit. But no, don't go judging it too harshly, I mean. Because for one thing, I'm not an inventor. I'm not an engineer. I'm not very technical minded. I don't know much about how you invent things. I'm not a physics major. I'm not an electronics minor. I know enough to make a podcast, and that's virtually nothing. You don't need to know much to make a podcast these days. You do not. You press the on button on your tablet that you have in your spare room, and then you open up the app that records, and then you press record, and then you say stuff. That's all that's involved in that. So no, I admit, that's not very technical. So I did reinvent the wheel, just not very well. And if I, someone who's shit at inventing, I know very little about inventing, and I managed to reinvent the wheel in some form in a 6-minute segment. Imagine how much better you could do if you're a proper inventor who knows stuff. To think of the potential for that. I think that would be great. Once upon a time, there was a dog, basically a dog. And this dog was walking along the street one day, minding his own business, contemplating the mysteries of life, wondering why everyone was all in a hurry. Everyone seemed in such a hurry, walking in straight lines, looking straight ahead of them. Very few of them were stopping to sniff anything or pant. They seemed to be just putting all their energy into transporting themselves directly from one place to another using their legs or using those things they sit inside that seem to move of their own accord. Metallic things, I think they're called cars, the dog thinks. Don't worry, I know they're called cars. I'm speaking on behalf of the dog here. The dog thinks they're called cars, but doesn't know for sure. That makes that dog quite more intelligent and knowledgeable than most dogs. That's an above average dog, I would suppose. We don't know for sure, because we don't really know what dogs are thinking. But I think common sense tells you that most of these dogs are not going around thinking, oh, I think that's called a car, that thing. I think that's a Ford Taurus. I think that's a Toyota Camry. I think that's one of those punch buggies. You Americans have a game called Punch Buggy. I was introduced to this many years ago. A new version of the Volkswagen Beetle came out. I think it was in the 90s. Apparently, they're at least known about in America, because I heard my relations talking about it. They used to play a game called Punch Buggy, which meant when you see a Volkswagen Beetle, the new Volkswagen Beetle, you punch the person who you're with. Something along those lines. Now, I think they were doing it in a non-violent fashion, a way which I would find irritating, I can tell you. If someone punched me every time they saw a Volkswagen Beetle, I would find that annoying. Because for one thing, I would not be able to reciprocate, because I don't see very well. I wouldn't be able to spot a Volkswagen Beetle unless they've got a pair of binoculars, and I'm sitting there on the bench at the side of the road watching the traffic very carefully through binoculars or a magnifier or a camera or something. I'd have to go, oh, there's where it is. I'll put down my binoculars now and punch someone. I don't think that would look mad. That's a bad look to have, even if it's consensual. You don't want to be seen punching people every time a beetle goes by. They're going to think, oh, is that fella one of these anti-Nazis or something, and he's so extreme that he sees a German car and goes, oh no, that's awful, I'm going to punch someone for that. Well, no, punch buggy was apparently a thing at some point, or so I was led to believe. Anyway, this dog, he was walking along the road, going, oh, I think that's a car, I think that thing is called a car, I think that other thing is called a car too, I think it's a different breed of car. It seems to have dozens of people on it. That's very impressive too, that the dog would be aware of the concept of dozens of people. Maybe it's not using that actual language in its mind. In fact, probably not. It's probably thinking, oh, there is several beings on that. Beings of the same type of whom my owners are. Wait, do dogs know you're human? They probably don't. They probably just think you're. Or are dogs one of those pets who think you're just another dog? Does your dog think you're just another bog-standard dog who's in a pack with you? Maybe they think you're their pack leader. Are you in fact a pack leader if you own and operate a pet dog? I think maybe you are. If the dog sees you as a pack leader, then you are. Intentionally or otherwise, you are leading a pack consisting of you and your dog. So yes, you are a pack leader then, if that's the case. Whether you like it or not. You're also a fraud, because you're not a dog. You're not a dog. So you're a fraudulent pack leader. You're a fake and a fraud. You got this dog, and you've let it believe that you're its pack leader. If I was a dog and my pack leader started throwing sticks for me to chase, I'd be wondering what that was about. What's the benefit of that? What's the benefit of having one of your fellow dogs throw a stick for you and then have you go and get it and wag your tail and come back with it in your mouth? And have them take it from you in their hands, which they have for some reason, despite being dogs. They're probably wondering why you have hands. Why would a dog have hands, it thinks? That dog over there, my pack leader, he has hands. Why does he have hands? What are they? I know what they're for. You can do stuff with them. But how did he manage to sprout hands? Will that happen to me? Am I going to sprout hands one day? And where will they come out of? I hope they don't come out of where my paws are, because I don't want to be walking on my hands. No. So maybe they'll sprout out of my front elbows or something. I'll have arms coming out of there. Will that happen? I don't know. And you may think a dog is ridiculous for thinking like that, but think back to when you were a very young child, in the early days of preschool, and you started drawing pictures for the first time. Perhaps you draw a picture of your parents, and you might have just drawn an egg with legs coming out of the bottom of it and hands coming out of the side, or torso. And that wasn't much better than a dog would do. I know a dog doesn't draw pictures, but if it could, the dog draws pictures in its mind and thinks, oh, this is what a person is. It's like me, but it's shaped like an egg. Now, what an egg is, I don't know, but it's shaped like an egg. And it's got hands coming out of the side, like Mr. Potato Head. There's a concept, Mr. Potato Head. It's a man who's a potato, he has a little tuft of hair on top, legs coming out of the bottom of his head. Arms coming out of the side of his head, around where the ears are. Sometimes a moustache, and sometimes not necessarily looking like a potato. Maybe a peeled potato, I don't know. So that's potatoes for you. And then you have this dog. It's dog. This is absolute tripe, isn't it? Pure unmitigated drivel. This is the end of the programme. The end is now. Goodbye.